One in three adults will die of a disease of the cardiovascular system, whether it is a stroke, a heart attack, or another disorder of the heart, blood, arteries, or veins. Heart disease is the leading cause of death for both men and women today. Even though our hearts break more than any other part of our body, why our hearts fail us remains a mystery. In the new book, The Man Who Touched His Own Heart, Rob Dunn combines science and storytelling to tell the nuanced history of the heart, exploring the progress that we've made in understanding our most vital organ and why, despite incredible medical advances, the heart remains our enduring weakness. Rob Dunn is an associate professor of ecology and evolution in the Department of Biological Sciences at North Carolina State University, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable today. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Great to be on the show.
Very nice to have you with us. So what brought you to look at the heart in such detail?
So I've been working on and writing about humans and other societies for a while now, and I spent some time in sort of lesser-known organs, and so I wrote a lot about the appendix. And the appendix, for example, you know, for years we thought it did nothing. It was this vestigial organ, and now it looks like it actually has a really important role, or I wrote about the axillary organs, these funny organs in our armpits that make us stinky. And when writing about those organs, it was really immediately clear that we knew very little about them, and basically nobody was studying them. But as I wrote more and more about humans, I was surprised to find that for many of our more central organs, the same was true, that while we'd studied medical features of those organs for a long time, that there were really these fundamental mysteries still lurking in them. And the heart is somehow the most fascinating of those, you know, kinds of mysteries, because it's so central. You know, the way our body works hangs on its actions, and superficially very simple. And yet there's still a lot we don't know about it, and how that came to be and how long it's taken us to discover what we do know about the heart. I just became kind of obsessed with it. And once I started writing about it and working about it, I couldn't turn away.
As I mentioned in the introduction, and you mentioned in your introduction to the book, is that when you look at the heart, hearts break more than any other parts of our body. And the heartbreak, as you put it, is a really ancient story, isn't it?
It is. For a long time, we didn't know how ancient it was. And recently, it's become clear that it's at least 2,000, probably more like 6,000 years ancient. Mummies have now been found with heart disease, and at first those were Egyptian mummies, and so the thought was, well, maybe they're like us, and they ate really royal fatty foods, and so they were just sort of the precursors of modern couch potatoes, but with, you know, better pyramids. But then as more mummies have been considered, it's become clear that around the world and in many different cultures, including hunter-gatherers, that people have had heart disease going back thousands of years. And so it's ancient in that way. But what's really interesting is if you think about its ancientness in deeper time, you know, what's going on with the other primates that are not human, that stuff gets really mysterious.
And in that, what we find, one of the many things, is that we will see our heartbeat, 2 billion beats in our lifetimes, where animals, other primates, is far less, right?
Yeah, so on average, a mammal gets about 1 billion heartbeats if it's lucky. You know, if you don't get eaten by a leopard, if you don't get hit by a truck, you can
right.
hope for 1 billion.
If all's going well.
Yeah, if all's going well. But, you know, modern humans in developed countries, if all goes well, can get as many as 2.5 billion beats. And so we get about 1.5 billion extra beats, which is our special human blessing, thanks to public health and medical interventions. And so we get a whole extra life with which to do good things or wicked things, I guess, whatever you choose.
How fragile an organ is the heart? Meaning, is there just a lot there that can go wrong?
Well, you know, so it can go wrong in terms of its rhythm. And so in terms of the firing of the muscle, and that's pretty common. You know, some form of arrhythmia turns up in a really high percentage of adults eventually. But its greater weakness actually relates to these special arteries that feed oxygen and nutrients to the heart. We think about the arteries as sending the blood out to our body to feed our, you know, all the extremities and everything that's going on. But it turns out that one of these really central roles is it has to feed itself. And so it has these actually pretty narrow arteries that surround it And for humans, those are actually, I think, I mean, they're the weakest link in our body in some ways because they clog. And when they clog, the heart, you know, in essence, starves both for oxygen and ultimately for nutrition. And so if you were to imagine, you know, stretching out all the pieces of a human and thinking about what are the links that the existence most depends on, it's those little narrow arteries that are right up there at the top. And so it's, you know, it's interesting because it's superficially this very durable, tough muscle, but suspended by those not so tough arteries.
Rob Dunn is the author of the book, The Man Who Touched His Own Heart, True Tales of Science, Surgery, and Mystery. Tell us about The Man Who Touched His Own Heart.
Sure. So in the early 1900s, a guy named Werner Forssmann was working at a hospital in Germany, and he had seen an image of a study of horses in which a catheter had been fed up through a vein into the heart of a horse to measure its blood pressure. And Forssmann thought that he might be able to do the same thing on humans. And he was fascinated by, really obsessed with this idea that he could potentially feed a catheter into a human heart. And the exciting bit about this was that Forssmann had worked lots with cadavers, and he'd seen in cadavers all the ways that human hearts could fail. But there was no way to identify those problems in the heart in living patients, and much less a way to treat them. But first, you had to be able to identify that they were there. And so he thought maybe if you could send a catheter up into the heart that everything would change. So he went to his boss at the time and said, look, I want to try this on a human. I want to send a catheter up a vein and get it all the way to the heart so that we can try to do some new things. But Forssmann was a new guy in the hospital, low man on the totem pole, and his boss said, no way. And so Forssmann said, well, I'll do it on myself then. Just let me go in the lab. I'll do it on myself. His boss said, no, why don't you go try it in rabbits? And Forssmann was not deterred. He was very committed to this, realizing this experiment. And so he convinced a nurse, Gilda, to help him out. And he said, Gilda, you know, I'm going to do this on you, and it's going to be for the greatness of science, and we'll do it together, and this will be a huge breakthrough. And he must have been a very persuasive guy because she said yes. And so they go into the hospital, and he straps her down to do this experiment on her and gets her all ready, and then he turns around, and he starts to put a catheter into his own arm vein. And she sees what he's done. You know, he's doing it on himself, and she screams, but she can't stop him because she's strapped down. And he proceeds to push it up his arm and all the way to what he thinks is probably all the way to his heart. And it's at this moment that he realizes they're doing this in a room without an X-ray machine. And so although he thinks that he's actually done it, he's done what he hoped to do, he can't show anybody. And so he unstraps Gilda, and they have to walk down two flights of stairs with this catheter, maybe bobbing in his heart. They really have no idea how dangerous this is, and turn out it is somewhat dangerous. And they get down to the floor where the X-ray machine is, and Forssmann's colleague tries to pull the catheter out of his arm, tells him he's crazy, what's he doing? But he gets to the X-ray, and with the X-ray machine can show that he's almost got it all the way to his heart. And so he gives it one last final shove and gets it into the atrium and takes the picture. And in that moment, what he's done is the first catheterization of a human heart, which will make way for all of what follows in cardiology, all of the magic that can now be done without cutting your chest open to heal your heart. And so that's the heroic part of the story. The less heroic piece is what happens next. But
well, does he make it?
He does make it. So yeah. He lives, and he's able to do a number of more experiments, but he's not able to really get a job before the war doing research. You know, he eventually gets a surgical job, but not one where he can keep doing this work. And so although he publishes a paper, and the paper gets some acclaim, he can't follow up on what he's done. And so he's dreamed of starting a whole field, and it's not to be. Then World War II starts. He goes into the war and comes back out, continues his work, but not in research, and is very forlorn about the possibility he missed, what he could have built upon but never did, which is about when he hears that two Americans have won the Nobel Prize for following up on his work. Two Americans he's never met, he doesn't know, and they've been awarded the prize for building on you know, the seeds that he planted. And so this is a sorrowful moment until a day later, essentially, he figures out that he's also been awarded the Nobel Prize.
Wow.
And so with it, a great deal of vindication.
Now, you spoke about the magic we have now. And in conclusion, as we wrap up, I'm curious as to where you think we are when it comes to that magic of dealing with the heartbreaking. Is there still a long way to go? Do we still have a lot to figure out, or are we on a pretty good track?
I think we know a lot about the ways in which we can intervene in the heart. We know a lot about how the muscle of the heart works, but we're still missing huge pieces of the story. And so it was only in the last couple of years, for example, that it was realized that chimpanzee hearts don't fail the ways that ours do. Fundamentally different heart problems, and nobody really understands why yet. It's only recently that it's been realized that congenital heart deformities in humans have a very evolutionary origin. And so the reason that congenital heart deformities form the way they do has to do with ancient aspects of the turtle heart and the snake heart. And so I think we're really good at looking straight forward and seeing the next step. But in terms of thinking about our heart in the context of the hearts of the rest of animals, we're really, really just beginning. And so if you're 18 years old and imagining the future and what you can do, the truth is that discoveries as big as those that have ever been made are still possible, and not just in faraway places, they're possible in the heart.
Well, the name of the book is The Man Who Touched His Own Heart, True Tales of Science, Surgery, and Mystery. Rob Dunn is the author. Rob, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I do appreciate it.
Oh, it's my distinct pleasure. Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The Man Who Touched His Own Heart, is published by Little Brown. Rob Dunn is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.